This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Yes! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Ian Freeman of the Crypto Six and talk show host for Free Talk Live, owner of Liberty Radio Network, talking about the FBI DOJ prosecution of them dealing in cryptocurrency as the people's money in New Hampshire.
They want to make sure that they control as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, it would be ATM justice. Kind of, you just freaking, you know, why even have a jury, you know? And yeah. The one thing, it was such, as activists in Arizona, libertarians, of course, were making a big deal out of FIJA, run candidates. It even passed the Arizona Senate, you know, in late 90s, and they freaked. It was amazing. What happened was, finally, the Supreme Court in Arizona, at the request of the Attorney General, after everybody was making a big deal out of it, they just wanted this issue to go away, the Supreme Court gave this unprompted decision. I don't know, you know, an advisory, whatever the heck, there weren't even a case. And they go like this. They said, yes, we acknowledge that the people, the juries, have the right to nullify the law. Just say not guilty, whether you did it or not, don't care. Yes, we acknowledge you have the power to do that, but we have no obligation to tell you, and we're not going to tell you, and you're not allowed to tell you, you know? And I'm like, wow, I've seen this before. Bob Schultz doing petition on some IRS thing to, you know, redress a grievance. We're going to go through all this years of thing, gets to Washington, and the federal government goes, yeah, you have a right to petition for redress, but we have no obligation to answer.
Yeah, I remember that.
What
yeah,
the crap?
The people group.
These people, right, and I'm just, this has been, and it's so refreshing to have someone, I mean, I know you're facing a lot of opposition here with the man, but no plea deal. And that, see, tell me how that's played in to your options now. How better off do you think you are? And what was the plea? Even if you pled, you probably would have been doing more time what you're facing now. You know, so I...
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, I'm facing 15 to 20 years. If the prosecution is not successful with their appeal, so I mentioned earlier that one of the two worst counts that I was found guilty of all eight counts by the jury. One of the two worst, so there was two money laundering, right? So the two money laundering charges. One was a conspiracy to money launder, saying that I was allegedly working with these scammers. And no evidence for that, but regardless, they found me guilty of that one. And then they found me guilty of the money laundering count where they say that I knowingly sold Bitcoin to an undercover alleged heroin dealer, which I didn't do, but the jury found me guilty of that too. The judge later on, 8 months after trial, because we put in a motion to dismiss at the end of the prosecution's case, and we put in the same motion to dismiss at the end of our case, basically saying, look, motion to dismiss all eight counts because the prosecution never proved a single one of them. beyond a reasonable doubt, right? And so the judge 8 months later said, okay, I'm going to grant your motion on this one count where there was the undercover alleged heroin dealer, and I'm going to deny the motion on the other seven counts. So he threw out one of the worst two counts, but now the prosecution is appealing in what they call an interlocutory appeal, which means that even though the case is still going on, they're saying, hold on, we want to go to the appeals court and ask them if this judge made a mistake by throwing out this one count. So they're not accepting the judge tossing the count out, and they want the appeals court to bring that count back, to bring that guilty back. So if that guilty comes back, then the sentencing guidelines goes back up to like 30 to 70 years. But right now it's like 15 to 20 years. And that's what I'm facing. The prosecution is pushing for the maximum 20 years. They want to get $20.5 million in so-called forfeiture, for every dollar that they say went through the money transmission that they alleged that I was doing. And they want so-called restitution for victims that I didn't create, the victims that were very sad victims of online scam artists. They want me to have to pay for what happened to these people. And so they're pushing for everything they can possibly get. And it's ultimately going to be up to the judge to decide. He doesn't have to do the sentencing guidelines. He can go above them. He can go below them. So that's where the case is currently at. We were supposed to have sentencing this week. It kind of happened, but there's still like a part two apparently that's coming up, because the judge is saying he's considering the prosecution's arguments about whether or not there should be a restitution, so-called, in this case. And he says he's leaning towards the prosecution's arguments about that, even though his own probation department said there is no restitution due in this case because I'm not a scam artist. They didn't allege that I was a scam artist. I did not scam these people, and they never alleged in the trial that I scammed these people. They just simply said that I was, quote-unquote, willfully blind, which is absolutely not true, because we did everything we could to try to detect scams that were in progress. We had a whole know your customer procedure that we put these people through. And what happened was they just straight up lied. They were under the spell of these scam artists, and they would do absolutely anything these scam artists asked them to do, including tell us lies about why they wanted to buy the Bitcoin in order to get us to sell them.
What was the motivation for them to get the Bitcoin? What happened? How did they do that?
Fear and love were the motivators. There are two different categories of scam out there. There's a ton of different variants of scams, but the two main categories are scams that take advantage of people based on love and scams that take advantage of people based on fear. So some of the scam victims were in what they call a romance scam, where they would be on a dating website, and they would be contacted by somebody who was showing an interest in them. They had whatever story they had. Some of the ladies that testified at the sentencing hearing were talking about a guy who was pretending like he was on an oil rig, and of course things are going wrong and he needs money to do X, Y, or Z. And them, having fallen in love with this person, were willing to send them basically all of their money. And he did various different things with that, including buying Bitcoin and having them purchase Bitcoin from me. So that's what happened in that case. But there were other cases. One guy lost his life savings to a fear-based scam, where scammers called him up and pretended to be agents of the federal government. And they threatened him and told him that he needed to pay them or else something bad would happen. I don't remember what the exact threats were, but they pretended to be like the IRS or Social Security or something like that. And so he emptied out his retirement savings to purchase I don't know what all, because he only spent about a quarter of it with me and my friends. He lost $1.2 million in this situation, and he spent weeks of his life on the phone with these scam artists, them instructing him on what to do to send them his money. He spent weeks before they opened up a trade with me. Again, they pretended to be him, so I had no idea that they were scam artists. The scam artists were scamming me as well by using these people and getting them to lie. So this gentleman had already spent $900,000 before he came to me. And I didn't know that. I just saw his profile on Local Bitcoins. To me, it looked like he had already purchased Bitcoin a bunch of times. He had a bunch of trades under his belt. I'm like, okay, well, I'm still going to put him through my procedure, even though he looks like he's an experienced buyer. So I got his phone number. I got his photograph, his ID. I called him up, looked up the number to make sure that it was actually his number and that it wasn't like the scammers with like a fake phone number. And, you know, I don't want to talk to a scam artist. I want to talk to a real person because I've learned a lot about scams by this point and how to detect them. Right. So I actually had a whole list of questions about, you know, are you being put up to this? Is there a third party involved in this? Are you under threat? Or are you being coerced? You know, these are some of the questions I asked. Why are you buying the Bitcoin? And he said he's buying it for, you know, he's retired. He wants to invest. He's bought Bitcoin before. I asked him what wallet he's using. He answered the question. So I was completely convinced, like, this guy, he's bought Bitcoin before. He's buying it for retirement purposes. He's got a, you know, experience on Local Bitcoins, it looks like, according to his profile. I'm like, okay, this guy passes, I'll sell him the Bitcoin. So I sold him the Bitcoin, and then he came back a couple days later, I think, and bought some more, and then he bought like a third time after that. So to me, he looked like a happy return customer. I didn't find out until later when his bank tried to pull back one of his wire transfers. I tried calling him up, like, hey, you know, what's going on? But I got his voicemail, and he then sent my number apparently to the sheriff's department in Travis County, Texas, which is the Austin area. And I was contacted by a detective who wanted to ask me, obviously, about the situation. And I was happy to help him and sent him all the files that I had on this person who had represented himself as a legitimate buyer of Bitcoin.
Where do you live?
And they called Travis County, Texas.
So how is they, he's going to you in New Hampshire because...
Because I was a highly rated Bitcoin seller on localbitcoins.com. There were, you know, thousands of people who are on that site who would have sold in Bitcoin, but I was a top-tier seller. I mean, I've sold to thousands of people in the 5 years that I was doing that. I had 100% feedback, positive feedback. I had, you know, a ton of sales under my belt. So, like, you know, you're buying Bitcoin from somebody, you want to go with somebody that's got some experience. So that's, I presume, why I was chosen. But I wasn't the first person he bought Bitcoin from. He had bought from multiple other sellers on that site prior to coming to me. And the thing that was really interesting about this, that's the thing. We found out, I didn't know this until trial. So on cross-examination, my attorney asked him if the federal government had ever asked him a single question about the other $900,000. So he lost about $280,000 through my friends and I when he was buying Bitcoin through us. But he lost another $900,000 to these scammers prior to coming to us, as I understand it. And his answer was no. They never asked him a single question about the $900,000. They never asked him about the scammer. They never asked him about any contact information, like what phone number the scammers were calling from, anything at all about them. No. And it wasn't him. It wasn't just him. There was another woman who was a real estate agent. She also represented herself as, like, you know, a legitimate business lady who was just buying Bitcoin for herself and some of her friends. And she had purchased Bitcoin from me for over a year on and off, just regularly buying Bitcoin. And she seemed just to be a good customer. She came to the trial and testified that she had been talking with her scammer for more than half a decade and that she had lost $100,000 to this scammer early on, emptying out her bank account. And then at that point, she was then helping the scammer. Now, I don't think she knew she was helping the scammer because they probably concocted some sort of story. But the scammer was then having other people send her money, which she would then do what the scammer instructed with. And so that was going on for years, apparently, before they decided to open up a trade with me on Local Bitcoins. And once again, my attorney asked her, did the FBI ever ask you about the scammer? Did they ever ask you anything about who this person was or try to, you know, set up a meeting with him or whatever, anything? And she said no. She said that she would be happy to give the FBI some information about her scammer.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, she admitted she'd been speaking with the scammer up until just before the trial. a week before the trial, she had had a conversation with the scammer, but the FBI had never asked her a single question about it. So,
they
obviously
had
zero
interest. These guys are
scammers.
Agent, you know, informant, provocateur, part of, kind of, you know, it just seems so weird.
The main agent who was investigating the case, Catherine Tebow, she admitted that in her 24 years of investigating cases like this, she's never once caught a single scam artist.
Why? Because they don't care?
So, I don't know if it's for lack of trying, or if it's
just, a whole lot of trying.
You know, they're not in the United States. Maybe it's because they're not in the United States and they're hard to catch outside of the U.S. I don't know, but they didn't even ask a question. I mean, how can you catch them if you're not even going to ask a single question?
Because their goals are different. What do you think the goal is? This whole process that you've gone through, what do you think the intent is of the government?
Well, clearly the goal of all of these prosecutions in the world of cryptocurrency, because I'm just one of many. I'm just one of the few who didn't take the plea deal. But many have been charged. Many have taken a plea. And the goal is to obviously intimidate people into not selling Bitcoin and to say you have to have your government permission slip in order to do this sort of thing. And it's part of a larger attack on the cryptocurrency world. I mean, we've seen what's happened, of course, with the crypto exchanges being targeted here in the U.S. by the SEC and the CFTC. There are multiple lawsuits there. You got Library being targeted by the SEC under these 90-year-old securities laws where they're trying to shoehorn cryptocurrency into that. And then you got the so-called Justice Department bringing criminal charges against people like me and saying, well, this is money transmission, which is, again, decades old.
Okay. Why do they care? What is the real reason? Who are they defending, operating for?
The banks.
The strong arm? Oh, it comes down to the
banks.
Bank.
I mean, the banking system, the central banks and their buddies, the private banks. I mean, these are all the same group of people, essentially. The Federal Reserve is the big banks, right? So somebody up there knows that cryptocurrency is a threat to their existence, and they want to stamp it out. They want to intimidate people into not using it, and to some extent, they're having success at it. You know, I don't think this is over by any means. I think that cryptocurrency has a long life ahead of it, and it's going to become more popular, but they're doing everything they can to make it as scary as possible to the average person. They're going after Tornado Cash now, which is an Ethereum mixer. This is just programming on the internet, and they're calling it sanctioned. They're saying if you use this mixer on the internet for Ethereum, that you're now guilty of violating sanctions. I mean, they're trying to put people in prison for writing code. And that's, you know, ultimately what they're doing.
Stop him, Ross Ulbricht. They put him in 3 life sentences for creating a web page. Let's look at this. I want to get your comment on this. Have you seen this? You know, this is Eric Voorhees.
Yeah, I just watched it last night.
You know, I'm about halfway through it. You know, I just had to do shows all day. But, you know, he was at a conference. This is on X or whatever. And Eric Voorhees, we've known since the beginning of crypto. And he's in the space doing a lot. But he and guys like Roger Ver and a few others that are big in the crypto space, what do they say? This is people's money. This is we're not getting permission slips. We're going to make it to where it's permissionless. We don't want to go to jail. But, you know, there's been, you know, all kinds of instances where he's come to the attention of the man. And at this conference, he goes, why are we here? What are we doing with it? To not ask permission. There is no permission. We're going to exchange and trade with each other in an ecosystem that doesn't need they, them, those. This was a powerful, I put it at the top of the page in anticipation of talking to you too, and I'm like, this is exactly what they're going after. And what you're saying, and you know Eric, you know, we do, a lot of us know Eric. And this,
he's a former Free Talk Live listener. Before he was crypto Eric Voorhees, he was Free Talk Live amplifier and listener Eric Voorhees. I remember him at the Free State Projects Liberty Forum back in like 2007.
Boom.
You know, pre-crypto.
This is, you know, there's a lot of good people in this for the right reasons, and we're up against the evil, they, them, blood-dripping, fang, pointy horn, pointy tail people. I mean, this is, yeah, this is getting weird. I want to go ahead and play this. It's only a minute and 27 seconds of you coming out of the courthouse, and then I want to talk about some that were videotaping without permission slip, and they didn't like that either. All right, let's go ahead and do this.
Super grateful, and I wish that everyone could have fit in the courtroom.
Ian Freeman addresses a crowd of supporters on the steps of the federal courthouse in Concord Monday afternoon. The Keene resident was supposed to be sentenced on felony charges connected to what prosecutors describe as an unlicensed virtual currency business. The government says Freeman laundered over $10 million in proceeds of romance scams and other internet frauds by exchanging U.S. dollars for Bitcoin.
The whole idea that I had anything at all to do with these scams is absolutely absurd. It's not true.
Freeman's sentencing has been delayed due to questions over possible restitution. His attorneys say he should not have to pay, pointing to a pre-sentencing probation report.
We agreed with the probation report on the restitution issue, where in the probation report they agreed with us that nobody deserved restitution in this case.
The government declined an interview with News 9, but argued in court that Freeman should have to pay his alleged victims. The judge is giving Freeman and his attorneys 2 weeks to respond.
The judge was gracious enough to allow us to address that, and it will be addressed in a formal pleading.
This is one of the benefits of not taking a plea deal, is you actually get to argue some of these things.
A restitution hearing has been scheduled for October 2nd. Reporting in Concord, I'm Tim Callery, WMUR News 9.
Oh, my God, you said benefit of not doing a plea deal. Man, that's incarceration words right there. You know, you're so freaking not allowed to do that. This has been an exercise in so many things that you have, you know, advocated for a lot of things. Freedom, choices, options, do it, do it, do it, do it. Don't be stupid. Look at what's going on. You know, comply with, you know, want to put you in jail kind of thing. And where they have this gray area or they're not, you know, don't have the jury, they just make it up. So they've done this before, you know, with you. Lots we can go on and on and on about, but it has been a target against what? Is it really just Bitcoin? What is at target here? What is it they're going after?
Well, I think it's a large attack against anybody who is involved in cryptocurrency, and it's also an attack against the Free State Project. I mean, as I discussed earlier,
it's freedom.
The FBI has been.
Guys, they don't want to, you know, these kinds of inspirational activities doing for leave me aloneism.
No. Well, and they know that the Free State Project is the most successful libertarian movement out there.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. Five American citizens are now out of Iran after being imprisoned in the country. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The freedom of these Americans for so long unjustly imprisoned and detained in Iran means some pretty basic things. It means that husbands and wives, fathers and children, grandparents can hug each other again.
In exchange for the Americans, the U.S. agreed to a deal giving Tehran access to billions of dollars of its own oil revenue the U.S. had frozen through sanctions. The deal has faced criticism from Republicans who have accused President Biden of paying ransom to a known state sponsor of terrorism. A person of interest has been detained in connection to the shooting death of a Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy in Palmdale, California. Deputy Ryan Klinkenbrumer was found with gunshot wounds in his patrol car vehicle Saturday evening. Dave Collins, USA News.
Cahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Ian Freeman of the Crypto Six and talk show host for Free Talk Live, owner of Liberty Radio Network, talking about the FBI and DOJ prosecution of them dealing in cryptocurrency as the people's money in New Hampshire.
Successful than the Libertarian Party has been in 50 years. The Free State Project is actually getting people elected, so they're very, very interested in infiltrating the Free State Project, and you can better believe they're doing that and have been doing that. In the same way, they know that cryptocurrency is also a majorly successful freedom project, more so, of course, than the Free State Project, because crypto is a global phenomenon, and it is permissionless. You don't have to ask permission to get into cryptocurrency, and they hate that. They love being able to tell you no. They love it when people have to supplicate themselves and beg and ask them for things. And they hate that crypto sets people free from that. So they're going to claw and scrape against it, and it's going to get ugly. And it already is getting ugly with countless people being put into prison cells over this in the last half a decade. There's a gentleman named Mark Hopkins who went to prison last year for selling Bitcoin without a government permission slip. He took a plea, and the reason why he took a plea in his case, if you ever get a chance to interview him, I recommend him. But what happened with him was he was selling on local Bitcoins, but he got their permission slip. He went and he asked the FinCEN, the Federal Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, to give them the permission slip for so-called money transmission, and he got it. So he thought he was all set, and he asked the Texas bureaucrats. He said, what do I need to do in Texas to be legal? And they said, you don't have to do anything. There's no permission slip in Texas. So he said, all right, well, I got my federal permission slip. I got my state. Well, there's nothing for a state, so I'm just going to go ahead and sell some Bitcoin. And so he did. And they came after him. And they told him, look, we're going to come after your wife unless you take a plea deal. She had a bank account that she had her name on the bank account you were using for selling Bitcoin. So he might have actually not taken the plea if they hadn't have threatened his wife. Of course, he's got a kid with her. And so, you know, if he's going to go to prison, it would be really bad if she went as well. So he went ahead and he took the plea deal and they sentenced him to 15 months for so-called money transmission. They charged
what's
him
his
with
name?
The other Mark Hopkins. They charged he's Rizzen, R-I-Z-Z-N on Twitter. They charged him with the other money transmission charge. The other one that I'm referring to, they didn't charge me with this one. They charged him with this one. In this other money transmission charge, it says they can charge you if you don't have a state license. So even if you have the federal license, the feds can charge you for not having a state license. So even though he tried to get a state license, the state of Texas said there is no license for that. And so the feds charged him with that. And that's what he pled to because he was, you know, concerned.
Okay, he pled to not getting
well.
A state license that didn't exist.
That's correct.
And the judge let him do that.
Yeah. Of course.
Of course.
The judge will let you plead to any charge as long as you claim that you're doing it voluntarily, which is, of course, a laughable thing because no one takes a plea voluntarily. It's always done under
okay.
duress.
Okay.
They don't consider it duress when they do it.
We're looking at October 2nd, where you go back and find out what. When they say, boom, they're hauling you off in cuffs right then, you know, or they're going to give you a week. I mean, how's this work? And how long do you think? You know, I didn't want to talk about that. I don't care.
It's all possible. All of those things are possible. They could give me a week. They could keep me out pending the appeal, and they could put me in prison right then and there.
Oh, and there's going to be an appeal.
Oh, yes, yes. That is one of the benefits of not taking a plea is that you can appeal the charges. And so we are intending to appeal all of the counts because we don't think that the federal gangsters pay that they proved any of them. The tax evasion charges, there were four of those. They didn't prove those because under cross-examination, their own witness from the IRS, this accountant that they had up there, she admitted that I may not owe any taxes. I mean, that right there is reasonable doubt. If the IRS accountant says you may not owe anything, then, you know, I certainly couldn't have known that I owed something. And you're supposed to also know that you have a duty to pay, which I also didn't know that I have as a minister. And I still don't think that I have as a minister of a church that makes no income. So, like, we had all kinds of reasons why the jury should have found me not guilty on that. And then, of course, there's the money transmission counts, which I find to be the most sort of legally interesting counts because, one, Bitcoin isn't money. It's code. It's freedom of speech. It's math. It is, by definition, not money, but the federal government, of course, wants it to be money. The Department of
right.
Justice wants that very much. So we've got a detailed motion to dismiss on that particular question of whether or not Bitcoin is considered funds under the money transmission statute, and we say it is not. But even if it is considered funds, it's never transmitted. So how you can say this is money transmission when Bitcoin never actually moves anywhere? It doesn't go from a person to another person. It doesn't go from one location to another location, which is what is required for an act. It doesn't even move on the blockchain. It just sits in the same place. And when you, quote, send it, which the wallets use terms like send and receive, that's not because anything's being sent or received anywhere. There's no motion, there's no movement of the funds. Yeah, it's just essentially, as I understand the way the blockchain works, is if I, quote, send Bitcoin to you, Ernie, which I'm not allowed to touch Bitcoin under my bail conditions, but if I were to send Bitcoin to you, the blockchain entry would just simply be deleted and then replaced, associated with a different wallet. It doesn't even move from one location to the next on the blockchain.
What,
so the whole
no
idea that there's
truck?
Any kind of and there's not even people associated with these wallets. So there's no transmission by their own definition. But again, the jury found me guilty of all these things, and that's because I don't think they understand the law.
Was there a jury interview? Did your attorney do jury interviews at all or anything?
Unfortunately, as I'm told, there are much worse restrictions on being able to talk to jurors after a trial in the federal system, and it didn't seem like something that we could do without any kind of suspecting that there was something untoward going on, like having some sort of, like if a juror had gone on Twitter and said, screw these free staters or something, right? Like if there was something we could point to that we could then use as to open up that realm, that might have been possible, but we have not seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And so, no, at this point, we have not been able to speak to the jurors, which I think would be very enlightening to find out what they were thinking. Because my theory is on this, Ernie, is that what essentially we encountered here is in a case of reverse jury nullification, wherein a jury without any evidence, any convincing evidence, there was reasonable doubt on all of these things. They found me guilty of everything because there was some really sad cases of some elderly people being victimized online. And I was the guy in the room, even though the prosecution made it clear I wasn't the scammer. They wanted to send somebody up the river for this. And so,
that was one thing. I wonder if this came
up. What happened?
There was oftentimes jurors want to know what the sentence is. I mean, you know, what's the incarcerated time that you're facing, or that they don't want them to know. They won't tell them.
No.
You know, and
no, they're not allowed to.
Okay. That's the final thing. You know, is there anything else that you want to do? There's another tack I want to take real quick before we go. But is there anything else you want to share with the audience?
Well, the other charge, as you know, has been thrown out, the money laundering count where they say I sold to an undercover heroin dealer, which I never did. So that one was, at the moment, has been thrown out. So that's good news. And so the worst charge right now I'm facing is this conspiracy to money launder, where they allege that I was, quote unquote, willfully blind to what was going on. And I was anything but willfully blind. And that's why we called a witness who was a college professor. His name's Paul Miwa. He teaches at, I think, Emerson College in the Boston area. And he is the son of a 80-year-old woman, I think, or maybe she's in her 70s. I don't know how old she is, but who was being scammed online. She wanted to buy some Bitcoin, and, you know, I put her through my usual procedure. I had her ID herself. I called her up. And then something got weird with this particular trade to the point where I put it on hold. I said, something's wrong here. You know, this stinks, possible scam going on. And so I froze that trade. She had already deposited $11,000 into my friend's bank account at that point. But I hadn't sent the Bitcoin away at that point. And so I tried, and I worked very, very hard to get that $11,000 back to her, which the reason why it took a long time was because the bank froze the account before they closed it. So it was literally frozen for months. But once I finally got access to it again, I reached out to her through her son, and he helped facilitate getting that money back to her. And there were other times when we were able to actually interdict scams in progress and save people from losing thousands of dollars. And they weren't all elderly. One guy was a young gentleman in New York City during COVID. He blamed COVID for the situation because he was home all the time. And so he was like, you know, not able to be as, I guess, aware. He had his reasons, but he fell for a scam, and I managed to stop it midstream and saved him from losing $5,000. Basically the entire amount in his bank account. Unfortunately, we weren't able to call him as a witness, but there was a doctor in Alabama that we saved from losing $4,000. So, I mean, we had a whole procedure that these people were following in order to identify themselves and identify that they knew they were buying Bitcoin. They wanted to buy Bitcoin. They were consenting to it. As I mentioned earlier, I had a whole series of questions. So this whole idea that, you know, there was any kind of willful blindness is just absolutely
ridiculous.
What
was the
ridiculous demeanor
of the prosecution and even the judge? I mean, they were like, and the jury, I mean, the whole system where they're like, damn it. Well, that doesn't matter. Damn it. You can't be a good guy a little bit. Damn it. You know, he's bad. He's evil. He's something. I mean, what was their, you know, the closing argument to the jury? Well, somebody's got to pay, and he's sitting right there. Go get him. I mean, what was their tactic? What was their venomous about it? Or they we got them, you know, kind of. Any of this stuff had any impact on them whatsoever?
Well, it's hard to know what impact the things we said had on them because, you know, they found me guilty of everything. But the prosecution was very, very nasty, very venomous. They said in their recent filing that they made the sentencing memorandum where they argued for the maximum sentence. They said this was the worst kind of crime. And, you know, apparently worse than, like, murder and rape.
That they don't prosecute anymore, yeah.
Yeah, they're saying this is the worst kind of crime, and you know, this is the attitude that they took, that I was somehow, you know, responsible for what happened to these people when all I did was what they asked me to do and what they told me they wanted me to do. And it's the same thing that the bank tellers did. The bank tellers that sent away.
How do you think appeal is going to go on
fortune.
This?
I mean, hard to know. You know, our arguments, they didn't prove any of these counts. We've got plenty of evidence of reasonable doubt in every single case. So
you think they're going to put you in jail while you appeal because we need to get them in jail sometime? We got to get them.
I mean, that's pretty common for somebody to go to prison after they get convicted of something. So the fact that I'm even out now is fairly unusual. The judge had said when I was convicted that he didn't want to put me in jail pending appeal because he thought there was an appealable issue. However, he may have meant that the one charge that he threw out, he considered to be appealable, and he doesn't consider the other seven to be appealable. So he may decide to go ahead and put me in. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do.
Okay, this is the one final subject I want to, you know, discuss with you, because you and I have been known each other a long time. We've been our own kind of activists in different places that overlap, dude. We get it. Okay, and I consider you one of the guys that get it. You know, you get it. What you're up against. What's the solution? I mean, you know, we're always the peace guy, I'm the love guy, and we got to do that because we understand that to be the most effective thing, and it also is what pisses them off more than anything. You know, is that you're out there being peaceful and you're showing them what they are, and that's very effective. But how is this going to unwind? I mean, you might be safer in prison. I mean, you know, it's like, whoa, the zombie apocalypse, I'll just ride it out in here for a little while. Let me know what's up, you know. And these thick walls might, you know, save us from the whatever. But the it's going to be a different world. If you go to prison, when you come out, I don't think it's going to be the same. We're going to miss you, you know. So I'm wondering what you think the solution is. Does the institutions have to just fall, evaporate, be ignored out of existence? Is it going to be a food thing and we're all farmers now? You know, I mean, how do you think this is going to descend into this economic morass, this crap apocalypse that's coming, in my opinion? You know, we've been waiting for whatever, you know, for a long time this is going to come crashing down. I don't see how the dollar survives. I don't see how this doesn't become a food thing. I don't see how legitimacy of government is elevated in the minds of anybody when this kind of crap that goes on. So what do you think's going to happen, and how's it going to play out?
That's a great question, and I do agree that peace is the way. I don't think that violence is the solution. I think that's what they want us to do. That is what they are prepared for. That's what they train for. And as you said, they don't know how to handle peaceful civil disobedience. They certainly don't know how to handle it when it comes from multiple people. They don't know how to handle multiple people doing non-cooperation. And these are things that they're just not prepared for. I think that ultimately the time is on our side in that their system is going to come crashing down. We won't have to lift a finger to do that. Certainly, you know, people can protect themselves from that, I think, by looking into alternatives from, you know, to escape the dollar, such as cryptocurrency, gold, silver. We mentioned the gold backs, beautiful, beautiful things earlier. So these are things you can do to protect yourself economically from the crash that likely is going to happen. But when, of course, is the question. I mean, they have a lot of tricks up their sleeve. I mean, if you look at countries like Venezuela, for instance, where they've been devaluing that currency heavily for, you know, a decade plus, they're still there. I mean, that Maduro is still the president, and they are still hungry. You know, it's a bad situation. It's gotten worse over the years, and it hasn't changed. So it's hard to say that it's all going to come crashing down before the next election. That doesn't seem very likely. You know, how long is it going to take? Is it going to be 5 years? Is it going to be 15, 50, or
it won't happen all at once. I mean, you see it coming, but it will happen overnight. I mean, it's going to be all of a sudden, and we're done. And I'm very fearful of that, which is why we prepare. You know, I mean, just, you know, food, having a place, you know, having a bus. I mean, you know, whatever. But the I don't want to stop the interview without complimenting you on being such an inspiration for so many people. And you've lived your principles. You're doing it now. You're taking it. And I just got to ask, you know, I mean, I've gone through this stuff, you know, kind of, you know, over time, and it's a decision you make. You just, you know, for me, it's a God thing. Whatever, I do the right thing, and, you know, and I have the support of my friends and family and my kids and, you know, my, you know, daughters and sons-in-laws and everything, and grandkids. I mean, it's just really, really gives me a lot of staying power for this kind of stuff. For you, how pressing is all this attack constantly, and you're doing 6-7 days for years of radio talking about this stuff? I'm just, how does it wear on you? I mean, how are you holding up your humanity and, you know, keep the peace and love mindset? I is there some secret, you know, sauce or attitude or decision you've made, you know, inspire us, you know, inform us? How do you do that?
I think positive affirmations are really helpful. You know, to speak things aloud or in your mind that are very, very positive, to remind yourself of who you really are, peace and love, and, you know, focusing on these things. When negative thoughts come in, you can be aware of those things. You want to be the observer of your thoughts. You don't want to be ruled by those things, because they're not necessarily you. Where those things come from sometimes is a mystery, but you don't have to believe everything that you think. So try to be aware of, you know, any negativity, and just forgive yourself for it, reject it, and focus again on being peace and being love, and, you know, exuding that out there into to the universe as much as you possibly can, and hopefully it'll, you know, come back to you. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's certainly how I focus and keep as cool as I can. I always get these comments from people about, like, oh, I don't know how you do it, man. I'd take the plea. I would do, you know, X, Y, Z. And it's like, you know, when I got into liberty activism, I knew there were risks involved. I knew that if we become successful as we are being here in New Hampshire, I knew that they were going to target us for it. And, you know, you've seen what has happened to some of the peaceful leaders in the past in, right, in history. It hasn't been good in a lot of cases. You know, this beast, the evil of the federal government thugs, they're not just going to go quietly away. I mean, they're going to thrash, and they're going to claw, and they're going to make some impact before their central bank falls, or before their wars stop, or whatever it ends up looking like. But again, we have to stay peaceful, because that is what they are counting on. They're counting on people going to violence. They're counting on that stuff. They know how to handle that. They're trained for it, and they would just love to hurt, have an excuse to hurt more people. So I think that, to come back around to the question about what you can do things to protect yourself, like you were talking about, Ernie, you know, getting into the alternatives, protecting yourself by getting out of the cities. You know, these are things that are, like, pretty obvious, but maybe some people need to hear it again. But then I think the most effective thing has to be to get together with an actual community like we are here in New Hampshire. Because it's one thing if you move out to the farm and you're trying to take care of yourself and your family, but if there's no one in the vicinity that you can count on for anything, if there's no one in the vicinity that believes in freedom, that is, you know, of the same mindset as you, if they understand the ideas of liberty, if you're without those neighbors, then you're going it alone. And that's going to be really tough when the time comes. Here in New Hampshire, we have neighbors who actually do care about liberty. We do care about this liberty community that we have. And there's so much that you can gain from being physically nearby people who are of a like mindset. Now, it's not going to necessarily keep me from going to prison, but it sure is nice to have 100 people show up at a hearing. I mean, that happened. I didn't expect that. I was just hoping we'd fill the courtroom. Like if we could fill the courtroom, I'd have been happy, but we ended up filling two courtrooms. So I'm so grateful for everybody that came out, and that would have been impossible, anywhere else. Just simply would have been impossible. So having a community of people who actually cares about liberty and who's active, in working towards that and talking about seceding from the union and getting people elected to, the state legislature and doing all kinds of things to try to roll back the government from within the system. And then you got people doing things that are outside the system, like, you know, Bardo Farm, where they're just feeding the liberty community with, you know, freshly slaughtered beef and things like that. I mean, there's just so many different aspects. And then, of course, you've talked to Carly Garrick. You've talked to many people from the Free State Project. I don't want to rehash any of that stuff, but that, that community is an important aspect of making it through all of this.
Yeah, before you go,
doesn't exist.
The people that got arrested for videotaping, what do you know about that?
Oh, yeah. I know a lot about it. I actually put together a video in the last couple of days. I think I released it yesterday on the Free Keen channel at video.freekeen.com. I took both of their videos because it was two guys. One of them is a state rep, by the way, that were recording videos. They went into the courthouse. The federal courthouse, where nationwide recording devices are prohibited, and they have been prohibited for since 1946. So, like, this is a big restriction on what it should be your right to be the free press. It should be your right to go into a so-called public place and record what's going on there, especially trials. We can do it here in New Hampshire. It's no problem to get into a courtroom and record here. Although New Hampshire has its own issues with recording in like the public courtroom lobbies and hallways. So we still have our own, you know, issues to deal with that at the state level, but at least we can record in the actual courtrooms. We can record all the court proceedings here, no problem. But in federal court, you can't even bring a photographic camera, a video camera, an audio recording device, a cell phone, a laptop. None of these things are allowed in to their court system, to the entire courthouse. And so these guys said they were going to challenge that.
Former CIA officer and survival expert Jason Hansen here. I teach people how to prepare for the unexpected. Right now, most Americans are not ready for the death of the U.S. dollar. You have money sitting in cash, and if you don't act soon, your financial future could be at risk. I have partnered with Advantage Gold, the number one rated precious metals company in America, to release my new digital dollar survival kit that's 100% free for everyone who calls today and claims your free survival kit. Simply call 800-900-8000 and give your email address, and I will have this new digital dollar survival kit sent to you immediately. Call 1-800-900-8000 now and claim your free kit, and also mention my name, Jason Hansen, and see how you could also qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Supplies are limited, so call right now before it's too late. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.